On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Marcus Barrahall talks about the loss to the Wizards, previews tonight's game against the Atlanta Hawks, and breaks down the Spencer Dinwiddie trade rumors. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Nets podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Barrahall. Josh is not with me today, but he will be back very soon. So I'll be doing a solo episode for you guys on this Friday afternoon. A lovely Friday afternoon in New York City. Springtime approaching, you know. Still the last chills of winter being squeezed out. And also being squeezed out are the Brooklyn Nets. They're close to being squeezed out of the playoff race. They fell back to 26-31 on the season after losing to the Washington Wizards on Wednesday night, 110-106. The Nets now clinging to seventh. They're a half game up on the Magic for the seven seed, and still, thankfully, five games clear of the Wizards, who are currently in the ninth seed, trying to make a late playoff push behind Bradley Beal, who was the hottest player in the NBA coming into that Nets game, put up 30 points, which for him had been quiet. You know, he put up the 53 and the 55 in his previous two games. So by those standards, the Nets kind of held him in check. But it did not matter. The Nets still lost in this one behind a riveting last couple minutes there after the Nets started off pretty terribly in the first quarter, just came out with no energy. Kenny Atkinson said after the game that he was very confused as to the lack of energy. The team was outscored 31-17 in that first quarter, just couldn't get anything going, and then sort of righted the ship a little bit in the second, played basically even, and then in the third were able to mount a nice comeback. Washington pushed out ahead a little more before the Nets eventually came back, and the game was pretty close throughout the fourth quarter up until the final moments. So the Nets did at least dig themselves out of a hole, but they were not able to fully escape said hole. You know, they climbed all the way out only for the Wizards and Jerome Robinson specifically to just sort of kick them right back into that hole. So definitely a tough loss, one of the more tough losses that they've had this season, and just sort of continues this downward spiral that they've had since the All-Star break ended with the Kyrie injury, and with they had that close loss in overtime to Philly, and then, you know, they came back from that and played really well in beating Charlotte by almost 30 points. That was great. And then now two losses to teams that are kind of in their same class, the Magic and the Wizards, in these last two games. Definitely discouraging, definitely disappointing. If there's one thing to take solace in, it is what I said before, that the Nets are still, despite all this, despite being 26-31, which is, they've been bad, frankly, they're still pretty firmly entrenched in the playoffs. As of right now, they've got, if my math is correct, 25 games to go in the season. That's a little quick mental math. Yes, they've got 25 games to go with a five-game lead over Washington, so still expecting them to make the playoffs. Right now, I think that the focus is like if they get the 7 or the 8 seed, because Orlando has won two straight, and they've kind of made this more of a discussion than it was. If the Nets had been able to win that Magic game that they lost a few days ago, then, you know, they would have, I think they were 2.5 up heading into that, so they would have been 3.5. Instead, it goes down to 1.5, and then all the way down to a half game now after this loss to Washington. So that's going to be a conversation. Josh and I have talked about this. I don't think either of us expects the Nets to do much of anything in the playoffs regardless, but I think if you're the 8 seed, you are almost definitely getting swept, whereas if you're 7, maybe, like last year, you can steal a game or two. Probably not two, but maybe you can steal a game and avoid being swept out of the playoffs. And it's crazy because last year had such a positive feeling, a positive vibe around the team, and, you know, winning one playoff game was viewed as like a huge overachievement, and like, wow, this team somehow cobbled everything together, put a scare in a team that a lot of people picked to make the conference finals. I know they didn't wind up doing that, but that Philadelphia 76ers team, obviously way more talent than the Nets, and Sure, Joel Embiid sat out a game. There were certain matchup things that the Nets were able to exploit, not related to that, but related to more so their attacking guards and Philly being a very big team that couldn't defend point guards very well. And that was kind of all that the Nets had offensively were D'Angelo Russell, Caris LeVert, and Spencer Dinwiddie. So it kind of worked out that way, and they were able to steal that first game, give some real excitement to the series. You know, Jared Dudley talking trash. All this to say, like, they won one playoff game, and this year they seem like they're going to make the playoffs again. I wouldn't be surprised if they were the 7th seed and they wound up stealing a game off of Toronto or Boston. But yeah, basically, like, for it to wind up being the same end result of losing in the first round in 5 games, but to have such a different tenor around this season is really interesting to me. Just like how expectations play into everything, how last year, like the timing of when you're bad really kind of colors how you view the season. Like last year, the Nets were terrible at the start of the year and then turned things around and wound up slightly over 500. Like this year, the Nets started off a little rocky because of the struggles with Kyrie, but then after his injury, and the team really started to gel behind Dinwiddie, who looked like he might have an all-star case for a while. The team looked good. There were a couple games over 500, and then now they've come down. So even though they're not much further back than they would have been last year in the standings at this point, last year they wound up being the 6th seed, slightly over 500. This year they've got a chance to be the 7th seed, slightly under 500. Could wind up being like basically a wash in terms of like in the aggregate, this year to last year, obviously much more disappointing this year. But that being said, I think that there's still, at least from my perspective, there should still be that same amount of hope going into next year as there was going into this year, if for nothing else than for the fact that they have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant coming back next year. Obviously no guarantees about what they look like when they come back, but that should definitely be enough to keep Nets fans excited heading into next year. I think that as bad as this year has been, for them to only be 5 games under 500, you know, it could have been a lot worse. And now there's pretty much no stakes the rest of the year. So if they are able to turn things around and they are able to, like I said, steal a game or two off of a Toronto or a Boston in round one, I think that that could provide some nice momentum going into next year. If Caris LeVert continues to play well, he played another good game on Wednesday night. He had 34 points in that one. 7 assists, 6 rebounds, 4 steals, kind of filled up the stat sheet and was pretty much the Nets' only source of offense. Dinwiddie had it going at times, but again, and I'll talk about this in a second, he missed that clutch free throw late, which, I don't know, I guess I'll talk about it now. I almost feel more confident with Dinwiddie taking like that step back that he missed at the end of the game than with him taking a free throw in a clutch situation. I don't know why, I just feel like when he's in the rhythm and the flow of the game and he can kind of like get himself into a good flow with his dribble and kind of create something either with that sidestep that he does or just blowing past a guy, even if it's like a contested jumper or if it's something at the rim where he kind of has to contort his body, I kind of trust him more in that situation than at the free throw line, all eyes on him, even though all eyes are on him in the other situation. But something about like when everything slows down, I feel like he misses a lot of those big free throws. And it's interesting because there are a ton of great players who I just wouldn't trust in that situation. Like a guy who comes to mind like that is Paul George, where he's an incredible player, great on both ends of the floor. And I feel like if your team is going to wind up winning the game by like 8 to 10 points, he's like ideal. He's a perfect player. He can play as that number one guy or as that number two guy. But I feel like if it's like real crunch time and it's like a 1-point game, I just don't trust him. Same with Anthony Davis. Like when he missed that free throw in the All-Star game at the end, and I know LeBron and him have said that it was like on purpose. I don't really buy that. But yeah, just like him missing that free throw, I kind of expected him to. And there's certain guys like that around the league. I think Dinwiddie might be one of those guys. Not that he's like as talented as those guys, obviously, but I think that he's kind of like a lesser version of that, where I don't know, I trust him more like in the flow of a game than when everything kind of stops and slows down. And that could be a problem in the playoffs. There were some trade rumors about Dinwiddie that came out this week that I'll talk a little bit about in a later segment, but he's definitely a guy where if you're not watching him night to night, you might have a higher opinion of him. Same with LeVert. Same with a lot of the guys on the Nets, frankly, Jared Allen as well. So Josh and I will definitely get into this more as the season sort of winds down and there's less game action to talk about. But yeah, there's definitely like a world where I would consider trading those guys. I saw this was just like on blogs, I suppose, but I saw some people suggesting like a package with like LeVert and JA and maybe some other stuff in there to try to get Bradley Beal, who they just went against in this game. I think that would be a mistake for Washington to do, but if the Nets were able to pull that off and bring in like a legitimate third star to play alongside Kyrie and KD, even like regardless of the fit, because I know that would not be the best backcourt defensively, I think that you kind of have to do it. You know, you only get so many shots in this league, and with Kyrie and KD specifically, like we've seen how quickly a season can end on like a freak injury, and you need like as much superstar insurance as you can get. And like a team like Golden State has kind of shown that like if you can accumulate as much of that star talent as possible, like it just really increases your odds. And it took multiple major injuries for them to lose last year to Toronto, and like even then they still had a shot at the end. If they had only had one superstar out, like if it had just been KD and Klay hadn't torn his ACL as well, I think a lot of people would say that Golden State could have still won that series. So I think as many stars as you can get is the way to go. And for Brooklyn, if they're able to parlay a couple of these younger guys who still have that kind of value around the league, I think that could be a good thing for sure. But going back into this Wizards game specifically, another guy besides Caris LeVert who played well in this one was DeAndre Jordan, who has been playing really well of late. I definitely wanted to highlight the play that he's had recently. You know, he definitely has outshone Jared Allen. He had more minutes than him in this game, once again, 30-18. So he's still not starting, but he's definitely seen an uptick in his minutes and in his production. He played pretty well in the Orlando game. He obviously was a huge factor in that Philly game. So that's a couple games now that he's put together after the All-Star break where he's looked really good. I don't know if maybe the break, the time off, refreshed him, but it's good to see him contributing, just because with Nick Claxton having kind of like an up-and-down year, being sent to G League assignments, and then other times like looking really, really good and contributing for the Brooklyn Nets on the court, it's good to have that kind of consistency. I feel like at this point, DJ is definitely getting overextended in some of these games, like particularly in that Philly game when it wound up going to OT. But I do think that if he's playing like around 20 minutes a night, I think he's giving you like a reliable contribution at that center position, which just kind of takes another decision out of Kenny's hands and just kind of allows him to be like, yeah, I trust this guy. Let's throw him out there. He'll know what to do. He'll be in the right places. He'll bring energy and effort on the offensive rebounding side. Six more offensive boards for Jordan in this game. So, and he was able to hit some free throws. You know, I just talked about Dinwiddie missing that clutch one late. DeAndre Jordan had the and one. I was sure he was going to miss the free throw, and he made it. It wound up not mattering, obviously, with the multiple threes that Washington hit in that last like minute and a half or so. They had three different guys, Bertans, Beal, and then Jerome Robinson, who all hit extremely clutch threes for the Wizards. But regardless, it was nice to see DJ just like step up and hit that shot. He was 4-for-5 from the line this game. Obviously not banking on that being sustainable, but at the same time, obviously nice to see as well. And yeah, let me just quickly get into that Dinwiddie rumor that popped up over this past week. If you've been a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard all the great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans. But you may not know that Locked On Nets is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Nets fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your local company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners. Not just any podcast listener, a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Nets fans and a predominantly male audience that is well-educated with disposable income, then let's put your company right here on this Locked On podcast. Local fans love to support local businesses. Text the word ADVERTISING to 33777 or visit LockedOnPodcasts.com/advertising and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help your team achieve Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit LockedOnPodcasts.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you. Specifically, it was SNY's Ian Begley who reported that the Pistons and the Orlando Magic had, you know, had internal discussions. They talked amongst themselves about making a trade for Spencer Dinwiddie before the trade deadline. I don't think the Nets were looking to deal anyone before the deadline, as is evidenced by the fact that they didn't. Josh and I talked about that beforehand, where even before the Kyrie injury, this was a team that was not going to go anywhere this year, and so it made more sense to just kind of evaluate guys the rest of the season and then make those decisions in the summer if you need to. So no surprise that Dinwiddie wasn't traded, but seeing the teams that were rumored to be considering him, the Pistons and the Magic, makes you think like what the Nets would be getting back in those trades. There was nothing specified about Detroit, but for the Orlando side of things, Begley said that Dinwiddie for Aaron Gordon swap was rumored. That's kind of been discussed for a while, and I think before the Nets signed KD, I think that that might have made a little bit more sense. I think that they're a little redundant together, but because neither of them, I think, is really suited to play the three right now. I think KD, when he was younger and certainly pre this Achilles injury, was like more versatile and able to defend that position. And then offensively, I think Gordon, he's gotten better as a shooter, but I still don't trust him out there as a three. And I think the Nets kind of want to play small anyway. Like, in an ideal world, both of those guys would be playing the four, maybe even like stretch five at certain times. So I think having them out there together, you know, I guess you could have a world where they're the two bigs. If you want to go like super small, have those two guys, Joe Harris, Caris LeVert, and Kyrie as a five. That's actually not bad as a closing lineup. But I think Dinwiddie is better than Aaron Gordon, and I don't know. There's not really like an ideal trade for him. Josh and I can get into this in a future podcast, but yeah, it's just kind of tough because what he brings to Brooklyn off the bench is that consistency. And I know Josh, at least earlier in the season, was more amenable to trading Caris LeVert, a guy who I'm not sure would fetch as high of a return as Spencer Dinwiddie, just because Dinwiddie, I think, has more national name recognition. He was talked about as a guy that could be an all-star this year. Didn't happen, obviously, but his name was out there. He's been in the skills competition. Like, I think he has more national shine than LeVert, and part of that is just because LeVert has had all these injuries where he's missed a bunch of opportunities for a national audience to see him just being out. So I think that with LeVert, I think that I would prefer to trade LeVert also. I think that Dinwiddie off the bench brings more scoring, more consistency. I trust him more to handle the second unit than I do Caris. So I would rather get rid of LeVert if I had to get rid of one. I just don't know that there would be a deal out there that would justify it. You know, Josh and I, we'll get into this. We'll dig into seeing specific contracts, play around with the trade machine, maybe see what we can come up with. But in the meantime, the Nets do have a basketball game to play. That'll come later tonight. They're taking on the Atlanta Hawks. And the Hawks have been playing a little bit better of late. They won their first two games after the All-Star break against Miami and Dallas, both playoff teams. They lost to Philly and Orlando after that, but still, they've definitely shown some fight over the last few games. They have John Collins back now after that suspension that he had earlier in the year. Trae Young has played really well. So this is a game that the Nets cannot sleep on. Like, earlier in the year, you looked at this game, you would have said, okay, this is like kind of a walk, kind of what the Nets had against Charlotte last weekend, but Brooklyn is not in a place to take any games for granted, even against this Atlanta Hawks team that enters play at 17-43 and in last place in the Eastern Conference. Like, even still, the Nets cannot afford to lose this game. They need to do something to snap this slide, and starting here, like, they need to take down the Atlanta Hawks. They need to limit Trae Young specifically, because as good as Atlanta's young guys are, and I do think that they have some nice talented pieces with Kevin Huerter, DeAndre Hunter. Cam Reddish had that key defensive play in the Heat game. He's been playing a little bit better of late. And John Collins, obviously. They don't really have guys who can create their own shots outside of Trae Young. So I think if the Nets can contain him, you know, you can throw LaVert on him, you could throw Dinwiddie on him, you could try Garrett Temple on him. There's a few different options the Nets have matchup-wise, but containing him and containing his passing specifically, I think, is going to be a big key in this game. I think Trey's going to get off shots regardless because he can shoot from literally anywhere inside of half court. So I think sort of the strategy should be to give him as many shots as you can, but try to limit his passing, try to not let him get other guys involved and swing to those guys for open threes, like on driving kicks and things like that. So if they can contend with Atlanta on the defensive end, I think that they have a good shot. I think that Atlanta obviously is not very good defensively, and hopefully Dinwiddie can take advantage of that. You know, Trae Young, as good as he is offensively, he does have to guard someone on the defensive end, and the Nets should absolutely pick on him every chance they get because he is one of the worst defenders in the league, and this could be a good chance to get Dinwiddie and LaVert going at the same time. You know, Dinwiddie was hot earlier, LaVert's been hot lately. Maybe they do a little your turn, my turn screen for each other at the top to try to get either one of them onto Trae Young on the switch and then just kind of abuse him on the defensive side. So that would be my hope for this game. Hopefully the Nets are able to come out on top and stop this little losing streak they have right now. They've lost two in a row, trying to get back on the winning side of things and then keep that rolling into these next couple games. A few tough games coming up. The back-to-back tomorrow, they play Miami. And then they have Boston and Memphis. Boston, possible first-round matchup for Brooklyn if they're able to catch Toronto. And then Memphis fighting for a playoff spot. They've had some injuries, but obviously they need to win every single game they can, a lot like the Nets. So that's going to be a tough game regardless. So this one should definitely try to win this. You know, that's my expert tip. You know, you try to win all of them, but this one specifically is the most winnable of this next week or so of games. So definitely want to lock it down. Speaking of lock, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nets. That was okay, I feel like. I think if Josh was here, he would have appreciated it, but I'm alone, so I'm just going to have to hope that you listening at home or wherever you are appreciated it as well. Like I said, follow us at Locked On Nets. Follow Josh at JMBass underscore. I'm at Marcus Barahal. We will be back probably with a podcast either tomorrow night or Sunday morning. Could be in the works, just talking about these back-to-back games, trying to give you a weekend podcast to recap those. But until then, be well. Bye.